This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at Burrow.com/ACAST. That's Burrow.com/ACAST. Burrow.com/ACAST.
In by Kulusevski.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Chris.
And our tactics guy and a man who's on the edge. It's Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Kill me.
It does feel a little like that. Before we get stuck into the abject misery that is supporting Tottenham Hotspur, I just wanted to say thank you for the very long and thoughtful emails to Peter King, Mike G, Sam Cooper, Alex Nathan, John Youngblood, Jack Kirby Lowe, Harry Tateson Stokes, and Daniel Widener. We really appreciate it. We don't always have a chance to send equally long replies, but your thoughts are really appreciated. Also, and I've meant to say this for ages, Tim Vasek or Vacek, I'm so sorry, Tim, made a really lovely video of his family trip to London, and it featured clips of our podcast, which was really fun and really sweet and endearing. And he did a great job with the video of the family trip. It was lovely. So thanks for sharing that, Tim. Appreciate it. We've got to do this. Not only do we have to do this, we have to do this for an hour. Can you believe we're going to have to talk about this for an hour, lads? North London Derby. I think, do you know what? I think there's two things that made this awful for me. The
first goal.
But sort of on a macro level. The first was that it was completely predictable, as in the match happened exactly as I thought it would. And the second was that I am jealous of Arsenal, and I fucking hate that feeling. They have got right now everything that I want us to have. They've got a coach who's been trusted to instill a philosophy and principles, and has done that and is now reaping the benefits. They've got a team that play progressive, exciting one and two touch football. They've got lots of homegrown players in their squad, like one of whom is an absolute star in Saka. And their system allows, like, the player that has apparently transformed them this year, Gabriel Jesus, to not be there, and they bring in someone who's clearly not as good a player, and they don't really see a drop-off because the system is the system, and it's all about the system rather than the individuals within it. And oh my goodness, to have something like that, it's just what I want, it's what we dream of. And it's so fucking frustrating that it's them that have this now. And don't get me wrong, it's not going to last forever. Like, it's Arsenal, something will go wrong eventually, right? But it's painful. It's painful to see it.
I mean, they have a manager that everybody wanted to sack, and a manager that stayed in place for 3 years, and a manager that got £400-500 million and was able to rebuild a defence and a midfield and a strike force. So there is that, Windy. It's not just that this has just kind of happened and it's been allowed. There was a fucking process to it, which they had to go through some real shit times. And they arrived at this point by getting through it, not by calling to sack the manager immediately as soon as things turn bad, which it has. It's gone bad, but it's not the first real time under Conte it's gone bad. And now everybody's losing their minds. Sack him, sack him. I mean, yeah, fair enough, we can sack him. But if you want to be where Arsenal are, then you're going to have to wade through the mud for a little bit longer than 4 weeks.
I think if you want to be where Arsenal are, you have to wade through the mud with a project manager. I don't think you can bank on Conte sticking around for as long as Arteta has. And
Conte sticks around as long as he gets the players he wants and he's able to build the team he wants. He won't stick around if you start selling the players from underneath him or not giving him the players that he wants. That's kind of what he does. He's not going to hang around just to be abused because he's having to play idiots for majority of the season.
I mean, Conte doesn't stick around longer than 3 years anywhere. Like,
okay, but he's only done a year here, so we've still got 2 years on his contract. If he only does 3 years, he's only done a year here, so we've still got 2 years to go.
But he's got months on his contract, right? He's got five months remaining?
Maybe, but I believe that if you give him the players that he wants, he will stay. If he sees this as it may not be a long-term project, which everybody keeps harking for, which I don't think we're going to do that anymore, but if you give him at least a short-term project, then he'll stay for that.
So Conte himself has said several times that this is not a quick process. This is about investment over multiple windows. He said that as recently as like this month, that this is going to take time. And yet we don't have the assurance that he's going to be around to see it through. So I don't, like, the position I'm in, I don't see how Levy can back that. Like, Conte plays a very specific style. He requires a specific type of player. He typically wants an older player who's more established, probably won some trophies, has some experience of winning stuff. It's going to cost a lot of money, be on big wages, not going to have a lot of resale value. And yet he's only got 5-6 months left in his contract. I think that's a really hard... I think Daniel Levy's in a really difficult position right now with half the transfer window left. Because what Daniel Levy will be thinking is, I need to make the decision now, which puts us in the best possible chance to qualify for the Champions League, because qualifying for the Champions League gives us the money we need to maintain the spending at current levels. I wouldn't want to be him making this decision right now. It's not an easy one.
I mean, Nathan hasn't said anything yet, so I'll let Nathan go, but I've got opinions. I've got so many fucking opinions. All I have is thoughts bouncing around my head the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, to Windy's point about a project, like, Arsenal invested pretty heavily, but not much heavier than us, if at all. But it's the type of players they brought in. They brought in younger players. Yeah, they brought in... let's do it, actually. They've brought in... okay, Thomas Partey, obviously. That's a difficult one to talk about. Yeah. But Gabriel Magalhães, Martin Odegaard, Ben White, Aaron Ramsdale, Tomiyasu, Fabio Vieira, Zinchenko. Okay, Gabriel Jesus, not that, obviously, a very developed player, right? But it's that profile of players. Those aren't players who are going to make... Those exact players, aside from Gabriel Jesus, are going to be players that Conte wouldn't play.
But I think it's more than just those players. It's the players that he was allowed just to bin off.
Absolutely.
Without having to... We've still got...
Well, we've done the same. Like, Conte was allowed to bin off Lo Celso, Ndombele, Dele, like, established big players. He had free reign to clear them out.
Let's not use Dele as an example of a player that could have been useful to us. Dele is a broken...
No. I'm saying that he got his way with this. Like, he didn't want them in his squad, and he was allowed to get rid of them. Like,
Mourinho wanted to move Dele on, and Levy wouldn't let him. And now he let Conte move him on. Obviously, that's mainly just a chronological thing, right? Mourinho tried first, Dele continued to regress, and then Conte could. But
yeah.
I think there's definitely something there. And yeah, and it's true. It's true of Arsenal too, right? So Guendouzi is a very good player that they had, but he fell out. He moved him on. Aubameyang, you know, things like that. That all of that applies. But I don't think that's especially different to the license that Conte's had to do similar. And I appreciate that, you know, most of those players are actually still technically on the books. They're only out on loan, but the process is ongoing in moving them out. And, you know, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, he does that, and we support him both as a club, support him, and as a fan base, largely support him on that. And then he comes out and says, oh, I haven't got any technical or creative players in my squad. And that's frustrating to me. But I think, yeah, in terms of, yeah, you know, similar power from the two coaches to move players on, similar amount of money spent. But I think, personally, more realistic selections in the players that they've gone for during this period of time, and that goes back again to the players bought under Nuno, to the players bought under Mourinho, younger players who are going to develop and improve and can be coached and are bought for a specific system, and it's the same system through the entire process, rather than going, here's by these players who suit Mourinho, sacked, let's buy these players that suit Nuno, Nuno sacked, let's buy these players that suit Conte, Conte's going to run his contract out, and then we've got to continually keep buying, again, not young players, but players who are at peak age to perform for the new system of the new manager again and again and again, because, like, what use is Emerson Royale once you sack Nuno? What use is, God, who do we buy under Mourinho? That's a good example.
Doherty.
Well, Doherty's kind of done all right under Conte, right? But was struggled a lot along the way. Yeah.
And then Perisic would be an example for Conte.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Who's very, very good right now. But if we play, even just with time, he's going to become a player that we have to move on. But if we ever play with the back four, a lot of our squad is misfit to that. I think that we look for a coach who can play back three next. So that's less of a, I think that we can mitigate that ourselves. But the general trend is keep buying peak age players for a manager because we think that, again, we think we're Billy Big Bollocks and we think we can contend for trophies right now. And that's not a realistic examination of our situation. We've got to develop over time.
I mean, I think we could probably play a back four with the new manager, because I guess it is now. We will be getting a new manager. I think you can play a back four. Romero is excellent in a four.
Sure.
It just means you've got to launch Dyer, Longley, Davies, all these guys into outer space and never see him again alongside Hugo.
So who's your back four?
Right, if I had to go 4-3-3 now, I'd probably have to end up playing Davies, Longley, Romero and Royale, probably, if I had to do it right now.
I think that's a pretty weak back four. I think that's like closer to four centre-backs than it is to an actual back four.
I'm not saying we should do that. I said if we move into a back four, we have at least Romero who can transition into a back four. I don't think he's definitely not wedded to a back three.
I do actually think that he's more of a back three player than a back four player, but he's played back four for Brazil, for example, and it's not impossible for him. But I think the general trend in the squad is that we would be ill suited. You'd have to jettison out a lot of players. Maybe you already feel that we do need to jettison out a lot of players, right? Mm. So that's not a dramatic change, right? But we're buying a lot of specialist wing backs and we're trying to get rid of the one specialist fullback that we have because he can't play as a wingback and because we bought him to be a defensive right back who would play kind of like a centre back under Nuno. It's just, a continuous mess. And every time we fail and we have to change our manager, we make the situation worse because we keep compounding these misfits. And there's no continuity between the types of managers that we're hiring. There's some systemic similarity between Mourinho and Conte, but that's basically by accident, right?
Mm. I mean, I don't think we should sack Conte. I think we have to give him the rest of the season at least.
But the thing is, though, Bardi, how does Levy justify the expenditure that he'll need to back Conte?
Because, like Nathan said, you make a decision to move forward. Your next coach will be one that's comfortable with a back three and wing backs. You make a decision. Tottenham need to. Daniel Levy is a fucking prick. He needs to make a decision on what the future of this club's going to look like. So we're in this situation where we flip flop from project to idiot manager to dinosaur to Conte. We've gone through all of this kind of stuff because Daniel Levy has no plan. So I don't think we should. I wanted to cut in that. I don't think we need to be feeling sorry for Daniel Levy because this is everything that's happening at Tottenham is fundamentally his problem. He's been at the club 20 years, which is why he needs to step back and off a cliff and let somebody else make these decisions. So if we're going to fire Conte, the next manager needs to be able to fit with the players that we got, which is a back three and wing backs. So I don't think we're going to get somebody in right now to fix that. So you either give it to Ryan Mason and we might as well just set fire to the whole season, or we try and go for a back three, which we buy the players we need right now and then go towards the end of the season and see where we are.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of where I was at a couple of weeks ago. We spoke about this after we had a terrible run. And I said, like, Levy's got to decide. And this was New Year's Day, wasn't it? Or the day after. This is right at the beginning of the month. And I said, like, Levy has to decide today whether we're a club who bring in serial winners and contend for the two trophies immediately. And therefore, he needs to spend a lot of money. And Conte is the right manager for that. Or he needs to, I think more realistically, look at the budget that we can have and go for an up-and-coming manager, the next great manager, and buy younger players and be thinking 3 years ahead at a time.
Mm.
And he's straddled that. It is January the 16th at the time of recording, and we have bought no players for Conte, and Conte hasn't signed a contract extension. So 15 further days have passed without any action, seemingly, in that department. Like, you can't look at this situation with the manager that we have, knowing who he is, the type of football that he plays, and the demands that he has, and say, this squad is fine right now. This can wait till the summer. It feels like he's trying to just sort of see it out until the summer, see what the situation is like in the summer, and then see whether we need to change the manager. But the decision needs to be made now. And whether that is, maybe that takes the form of, this is fucked. We need a new coach. New coaches that are good, that my director of football recommends.
I mean, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Aren't available into the summer, so we're just going to not spend any money in January and let this crash into the ground and have a miserable remaining half of a season and then rebuild in the summer. If that's the decision he's made, obviously it's not been communicated and probably wouldn't be because you're undermining your coach, right? That's the only possible sort of scenario in which he has acted on that decision. Because if he's decided anything else, why haven't we bought any players yet?
Yeah. Also, like, there's a lot of talk about project managers and everybody's looking at United as well. But Ten Hag's gone to United. He's doing a great job. He's completely changed how they've gone. But he went out and signed himself a world-class defensive midfielder. Someone who would walk in. Casemiro walks into our team. Forget about the age and everything else. He walks into our team and would instantly become our best central midfielder. He signs him a £50 million centre-back as well. Someone who could play his style of football, knows what he's playing. So he's gone out and signed him his Barella, his Bastoni, and then gone out and signed, maybe they overspent on Anthony, but given him the winger that he wanted to do to be able to balance his team. And just Spurs haven't done that. We haven't done it enough. And,
but Bardi, he did spend £150 million in the summer. He wanted Richarlison, and we overpaid for Richarlison because that's who Conte wanted.
He wanted
Bissouma, and we haven't even really used Richarlison in his best position.
He has been injured half the time.
That's true, but we haven't used him to take any minutes off Kane or Son. Maybe half a game off Son.
He's been played out on the right, where he doesn't look very effective, frankly.
Yeah. And they went and signed. And Ten Hag got Eriksen as well, which would have been great for us.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think United have stumbled into a successful formula with Ten Hag and then actually listening to what his needs are for the squad and delivering them. You know,
I think they spent poorly. I think they've way overpaid. Maybe you think that you do have to overpay for a club and a coach of this magnitude, right? I think they spent quite poorly, but they spent so much and they have such a good coach that it's kind of worked out.
Yeah.
For us to like spend £100 million on Anthony, not the best winger in the area of Divisi that season, like that would be a colossal fuck up that we would not recover from years, right? Malacia, I think, was a poor signing, or you know, a pretty mediocre signing at best. You know, there were better ways of arriving at the quality of Casemiro in midfields. They spent a hell of a lot of money for an aged player who Real Madrid were happy to move on. Lissandro Martinez, yeah, fair enough, done well there.
But they overspent on Casemiro for sure. But he's an instant. He's exactly the kind of player that Conte would want. He's a title-winning, proven player who instantly just slips in, and that's it. They don't need to work on him. There's something. Maybe he wanted Bissouma. I've been really disappointed with Bissouma, whether that's Bissouma the individual or Conte's management of him. It hasn't worked there. I think the only player who seems to have come out of this week, these last couple of weeks, with any kind of dignity about him is Sarr. And where I question Conte is he pulls off Sarr when it's clear that the whole game was passing Højbjerg by. Brian Hill as well should have got a bit more minutes. I don't understand why Son keeps playing. He's hoping that Son kind of forces his way out of this funk, but I just don't see it. I don't see him snapping out of this.
So let's do this. Let's do a bit of a dive into the game, because we've been talking around the situation at the club right now, and we'll come back to that. But let's give it some context. Let's talk about the match. There were some surprises in the lineup, I think it's fair to say. I don't think any of us would have expected Sessegnon to start. I mean, it was a bit of a coin toss between Sarr and Bissouma, I think, were Bentancur not fit. But I probably would have expected Bissouma and Perisic to be the two that started rather than Sarr and Sessegnon. Is that fair?
Yeah, I agree. I think we said as much as well in our Patreon-only preview pod.
Hmm. Nathan, any explanations for why Sessegnon and Sarr were the two?
I think that Sarr has played better in at least the last few months than Bissouma has. I don't think it's tactical. I think that Sarr is just playing at a better level. So we spoke about this before, right? Bissouma is a very good player who's been operating at a very good level in the Premier League.
Yeah.
For years, he's clearly still struggling in some way with what the requirements of his role are under Conte. He's not performing to his level of previous seasons. Not, I don't think, because he has decreased in quality as a player, just because he's struggling in some way. You know, there's some particular nuance that isn't sitting right with him or whatever. And then let's go and find for Sarr. So, you know, I don't think it's any more complicated than that. Sessegnon over Perisic has got to be a defensive decision, I'm pretty sure. It's got to be whether that is... Because we looked like we wanted to press high in the first half, but we failed. So whether that is Sessegnon's a better presser or whether we anticipated spending a lot of time being pushed back, Sessegnon's a better one-on-one defender, and both those things I think are true. Mm. I don't think it was about his attacking profile, because the thing that Sessegnon is good at in offense is really kind of negated by Sun being on the same flank as him. I talked about this narrative about Sun and Perisic not being able to play on the same side as each other because Perisic gets in Sun's way, but I think actually Sun gets in Sessegnon's way, because if you're, you know, you're Harry Kane, you're Kulusevski, and you move into the right channel when you're looking to pick out someone in the opposite, you know, over on the left side of the far post, it's going to be Sun. You're not going to pass it to Sessegnon, right? So what's the point of Sessegnon's ability to move into those kind of areas or whatever? I thought Sessegnon sort of did okay with those kind of movements, and our one good chance of the first half. Oh, no, we had Kane's header as well. Came from Sessegnon moving diagonally across and then actually feeding Sun in. So I suspect it was just a defensive thing. It was a big game thing. It was an energy levels and intensity thing is why he went for Sessegnon. And I wasn't completely shocked to see it.
The first thing that went through my mind when I saw the team lineup was, that's a shame for the set pieces. Because, you know, one thing you can say about Perisic is his delivery is fairly consistent. And he has created a lot of chances from corners with his delivery.
Sun's been doing okay at that as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's fair. I want to talk about the approach. You've touched on it already, Nathan, but I'll read out this email we got from James Sullivan in order to allow us to jump off it. So James says, "We all know we need better players, but this loss was on Conte. We were outnumbered in midfield and their players had so much time on the ball. It was an unacceptable approach for a derby, whatever the personnel. Even worse, there was little to no in-game management to react to the huge imbalance in midfield. I think Conte knows this, hence his sheepish post-match interview. The current way of playing isn't working, so for Conte to stay, he needs to make some changes to our system. Otherwise, just get Poch back and at least we can enjoy Spurs a bit. This is soulless." And I had a few messages from friends as well saying, you know, we're going to be outnumbered in midfield in this game pre-match. And my response was, it's kind of the point. Like, I don't think Conte cares about giving up midfield territory or superiority. It's, if anything, he wants the opposition to have the ball in midfield so that he can counterattack on them. So I don't think he would have been concerned about being outnumbered 3-2. I don't think he'd have been concerned about how much of the ball Højbjerg and Sarr were to have. It's about sort of how they use it when they have it. But what did you guys think?
I think that this game hurts more than other games, right? But stylistically, tactically, is very similar to what we've been seeing a lot of this season.
It hurt more, Nathan, I think, because it was the first half we were so comprehensively beaten down.
Yeah, yeah. We have this trend of a, you know, a game of two halves, right? I'm finding it increasingly hard to come up with any reason why this isn't a significant fitness issue, right? This trend happens again and again every match. So for it to be the case that it's a tactical problem where every match we come out and there's a sort of positional issue in the way that we're trying to press the opposition in the first half, and then in the at halftime Conte brilliantly recognizes it and alters it and fixes it, and then we go out and then that's how we win the second half. Doesn't stand up over doing that game after game after game.
Yeah.
The idea that this is like completely deliberate, that we could simply compete for the ball through both halves if we wanted to, but we're trying to draw them in to exert themselves or whatever. That seems
risky.
It seems risky, but it seems foolish to keep doing it after it's failed multiple times in a row, right? So for me, there's got to be some kind of fitness issue that this keeps happening, that our players are consciously or unconsciously saving themselves for the second half because they know that if they go too hard, they will tie themselves out. And I think that is what we saw against the Aston Villa game, where we pinned them back for the opening 45, but didn't actually create great chances with it because it was Hill's first start and he didn't find himself physically in the game. And then we were fatigued and Villa put two past us in the second half. I think we're afraid of that. I think we're both consciously and unconsciously afraid of that. So we're saving ourselves for the second half. The problem with that is that you keep giving yourselves mountains to climb, to come back from. I feel like it's not so bad that it's the case that we are completely physically outdone by our opponents. We're not like at a fitness and freshness level below our opposition. What I feel is this. Conte has succeeded again and again in games in which he's not in European competition, the exception being his title-winning season Inter, where, okay, they were in the Champions League, but they crashed out of it immediately with one win in the group stage. So, and you also have a strong tendency, not throughout, because he's played 3-5-2 again at Inter, but a tendency to play with a two-man midfield. I feel like in order for Conte's football to work, he needs his midfield, especially when it's a two-man midfield, to have a significant fitness advantage over the opposition. And when that advantage is even neutralised, you've got a 3-v-2 in midfield and you're just going to continually lose the ball. So I don't think it's the case that we're badly unfit. I don't think it's the case that we're badly exhausted. We're just not so much better than the opposition this season with all the amount of football that we've been playing that we can run over them for both halves of the game. We can only run over them for 45 minutes. And I think that we really struggle when we can't do that.
Yeah, I also think there's a significant problem when we have the football. I think it is as poor a Tottenham team with the ball that I can remember. I think across the pitch, from Son through to Kane at moments, the rest of the team, the back three, the goalkeeper, the fullbacks, I can't remember a Spurs team this poor and this weak and this easy to press. It's incredible how we'll just crumble. So we can't break down teams and we can't resist the press either.
I'm not convinced by that because I feel like, you know, the times that we've come back is when the opposition's sitting deep and we've given it to them when we've come back late in games. And like, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to take any positives away from the North London derby, right? But in the second half, we did take it to the team who are currently top on the table. We did have 60% of the possession. We did have almost all of the shots and in good locations. Again, I'm not saying I'm happy. I'm not saying that's good. I'm saying
there's a lot of game state there, though, right?
Of course there is. Of course there is. And that's the case for all of these as well. I'm not denying that. But I'm saying a team who are bad at the ball don't even create from those situations. Yeah. I think that I'm using that half and all the other second halves as like a data point to say we're capable. We're tactically and technically capable of taking it to teams, especially when they sit back. But even if they try to press us and we play over the top or whatever, like in the Palace game, I think that we have the capability. If you look at the goals for and our goals against, and the same with expected goals, it's pretty similar, pretty close. And even Conte said this is like, oh, we're good at scoring goals, we're not good at defending. I don't think that's good analysis. I think that our problem is that we just don't control the game anywhere near enough as we need to. Something I meant to make earlier is like examining the differences between two performances is I didn't want to put that down to a mental thing. I don't look at this team and I hated that game, right? But I don't look at this team and see the same things that I've seen at the worst times before under Mourinho, under Sherwood, where it's clear to me that the players have given up on the coach and don't agreed. Care anymore. I'm not seeing that because, again, of these comebacks, this isn't a team who like are going out there and they can't be bothered for the first half. They're not going out there and they're too arrogant about the first half. Oh, it'll be fine, because they would have learned that lesson by now if that was the case. For me, the only explanation is that there is a periodization issue. And I also accept that this is slightly different. Sorry. I also accept that it's a slightly difficult conversation to have because our fitness coach recently passed away, and you've got to, you know, we don't want to say uncomfortable things about someone who recently died. But I think that it's continued, you know, both before and after his death, that this is an issue that has been with Conte for a long while. This is why in the video, I'm pretty sure it's a free one that I put out. I put out a free video and I went back and I looked at his Chelsea side as well as looking at our struggles this season. And it's the ability to compete for the second ball for significant periods of time throughout games whenever Conte's playing twice a week. There's something wrong with the fitness, the freshness, the numbers in midfield, all in combination means that his teams get run over.
I think for me, the biggest issue in recent weeks when we've not been getting results is that the style is just so painful to watch. And I think you can make excuses. I think you can allow it when you're winning. I think you can say, you know, this is fine. We're getting results. It's doing what needs to be done. And we're scoring some good goals because Kulusevski is great at cutting in and bending the ball into the far corner. And, you know, Kane's a wonderful passer of the ball and so on, gets on the end of things. As soon as you start losing and not scoring many goals, you look at the style and you compare it to other teams and you think, these players can't be enjoying this, because I'm certainly not as a fan. You know, watching Arsenal pop it around yesterday, you know, everyone knows where everyone is. There's like a fluidity in their one and two touch passing and movement. And we get the ball and the sole aim is to push the ball back to literally our goal line to draw Arsenal onto us and then attempt to play out from that. In a very sort of stop-start way, it's not fluid. It's not one and two touch. It's clunky. It's quite slow. You know, the central midfielders get the ball and they're told to pass it backwards. You know, pass it to Lloris. Draw the opposition onto you to then create space in behind. And, you know, chilling, the ball gets chipped forward and we compete for second balls. I'm just sick of it. I'm just sick of that style now.
I think that can be beautiful football. I think that you know, last season we did some magnificent things playing that way. I think Conte teams historically, and I point to De Zerbi at Brighton playing not the same way, but with similar principles of drawing the opposition out. I think that you can play really wonderful football that way. The problem is that we're shit at it. We're lacking the energy to apply it properly. And even in terms of like drawing the opposition out by letting them have the ball and sitting deep, again, something I'm very critical of Mourinho for, and I'd be very critical of almost all coaches for. I give Conte a pass because he's so good at playing out from those situations. We've really struggled to play out from those situations this season, significantly because Romero's been missing a lot, Kulusevski's been missing a lot. Here comes this game. We've got both of them, but Arsenal set up really well to contain us. It didn't do a perfect job. We still had some presence from those situations. But teams are doing a better job, I think, of keeping us pinned in, again, because I think it's a fitness issue.
And also, I'd just like to flag, we're scoring a shitload of goals. It's not like we're not creating chances. Like we've said, we're creating chances and scoring goals. I think the biggest problem with Tottenham at the moment is defensively, we're a mess. And we have individuals who are giving up 4 or 5 goals this season through mistakes. That opening goal that Arsenal scored, that we scored for Arsenal, was...
Yeah.
I mean, that's something else. That's ineptitude at the highest level. That's like the Lloris goal when he broke his elbow against Brighton. I don't know what he was doing. And the team can't keep bailing out players like that. Lloris and Dier, for example, they've given away so many goals this year. We can't keep bailing players out, especially not against a good team.
I think we all agree now that Lloris has to come out of this team, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Should have come out at the start of the season.
Yeah, to the extent you want to see Forster starting games.
Yeah.
From that, he's our number one. He's our number one goalkeeper.
I think I might be there. And I think that is really telling because I don't think that he's great. I don't know. But I think that's really telling of our situation that our sort of mediocre backup goalkeeper, we all agree, should be starting at this stage.
And the thing is, it's not just about the catastrophic errors, which, you know, have been present for the last few years, but seem to have stepped up a level again this year. It's as much his ability on the ball, which is it creates nervousness in our back line, which then translates throughout the whole team. He's just not good enough with his feet.
Nope. It undoes the way that we want to play in those situations, doesn't it?
Totally.
It
does. And Arsenal scored their second goal because Lloris he dillied the dally. He should have gone short early, but he's lost all his confidence, so he didn't. And he ended up going long, and our midfield wasn't in position. Kane got doubled up, and then the ball came back the other way, and we were all out of position. It was because Lloris didn't pass the ball out properly, and he ended up having to punt it. And he punts it because he panics. And it's just, Fraser Forster is, right now, is a better shot stopper, and he's definitely better with his feet. He's not a good goalkeeper. He's no way he should be our number one long term for next season. But right now, I just think he's less of a calamity than Lloris.
I can't see Conte dropping Lloris, though. You know, the way he speaks about him, he seems to love it. In the same way that we've been frustrated with him sticking with Real, there's some sort of loyalty there that he loves Lloris and wants to keep him in the team no matter what.
Royale's been causing us problems, but he's not individually been costing us points. Lloris is now at a situation where he costs us points regularly.
Yeah.
I think Royale's cost us points, but that's a minor point to be trying to get into.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. But having said all this, and yes, Lloris was absolutely abysmal in that first, like unacceptably bad on that first goal.
And the second. The second was a decent strike. It was all right. But it wasn't a daisy cutter. It wasn't Tom Huddleston. It wasn't something which was unstoppable. Forster saves that. A mid-level goalkeeper saves that. Nick Pope, who was available for a free transfer this summer, he saves that.
I'm willing to give him a pass on the second goal. On the first goal, I'm absolutely not. I'm absolutely not. But
made a decent save in the second half, guys.
I just want to make the point that irrespective of the mistakes from Lloris, it was men against boys in that first half.
But
when
you can't hand initiative to a team like Arsenal. Arsenal's pure plan, what Newcastle did to Arsenal was the kind of the blueprint, is you just frustrate them. You frustrate them and you don't let them score and they'll lose their minds. They have a manager who's so highly strung that the moment things turn against him, the whole team panics. They're a young team, they're inexperienced. You just don't give them a 1-0 head start. You don't give them a 2-0 head start. We played the perfect game. If you could have asked Arteta what we were going to do, he would have said that, and it was a perfect match for Arsenal. And then they just sat back and managed it.
But they, you know, the balance of play before the goal, the way they were moving us around, they had us in the palm of their hands. We looked like we couldn't cope with them. I know that they're playing, like, don't get me wrong, Arsenal are, they're probably playing the best football in the league right now, so it's always going to be a difficult game. But we're paying our coach 50 million quid a year.
It's got nothing to do with it. It's
to like be able to coach.
We pay some 200 grand a year, 200 grand a week. It's got nothing. The money doesn't have anything to do with it. Conte being paid that much is not something you can hit him with.
No, you can't. You absolutely can. Like, he has to, like, he made out after the game that we'd been planning for this all week, that we had a plan in place to stop Arsenal. And yet we saw Odegaard constantly in space in front of our penalty area. What I don't understand. What's he attempting to do there? What, you know, this is their most creative, probably their best player, is constantly receiving the ball to feet around the edge of the box and being able to feed others. What's his answer to that? Conte has to earn his money as well. I don't understand how it was that bad in the first half. And don't get me wrong, I thought the second half was a massively improved performance. But like I said, Arsenal could afford to essentially sit back and play on the counter in the second half because they're two goals clear away from home. They can do what they want at that point. Sure. And sure, they rode it out a little, and Ramsdale made some good saves and we created some reasonable chances. But like I said, they could afford to do that at that stage. When the game was even, they were miles better than us. When they were one goal up, they were miles better than us. You know, it was just, it was a real, It felt like a barometer of where they are compared to where we are, and it made things even more depressing. And then you start reflecting on, you know, where does this go from here? Where do we go as a club from this position? And I think we do need to have a conversation about whether it is the right time to sack Conte now, which we'll do. But first, look, we better talk about our partners. We are happy once again to be partnered for 2023 with Athletic Greens.
So I started taking AG1 because I like to be alive and healthy. Spurs don't win anything very often, so the best chance of seeing us win something is by looking after my health and staying alive as long as possible. AG1 is good for your health. What's good for your health is good for your life expectancy. I drink AG1 because I look after myself. I support Tottenham because I've no choice. But I make good choices elsewhere, which is why I do drink AG1. Water, vitamin D, a squeeze of lemon, and a scoop of AG1. Shake it like you're shaking Larissa or making yet another mistake and get it in you. Enjoy AG1.
It's cheaper than getting all the supplements yourself, and it supports better sleep quality and recovery. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/extrainch. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/extrainch to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Bardi.
Hello.
What do we do? Do we fire Antonio Conte?
I mean, part of me is just like, let's fire him, because I don't know what my role in life is. I constantly have to defend these idiots like they're my cousins or I'm related to them. I like Conte. I think he's a great manager, but he's not my dad. You know, if we want to fire him, then fire him. I don't care. I don't get paid. Antonio Conte doesn't give me a slice of his £15 million. Does he deserve to be sacked? Probably not. Not right now. I think there's still enough in the season for us to do something. FA Cup, Champions League. We're still in and around the top four. So I don't think he doesn't deserve to be sacked. But what do we do? I don't know. We can't keep sacking managers, Windy.
So the two things that lead me to think that maybe he does deserve to be fired at this point, and I think that I realise that's a strong statement, but the two things I come back to are, I don't think he's improved a single player in his time as Spurs. I think you can make a case for Dyer and Davis last season were improved, but Dyer this season has absolutely regressed, and Davis is now essentially out of the team as a first choice player. And I think for one of the most highly paid managers in the world, I think it's reasonable to expect some development of your talent in your squad.
Bentancur is a sensational midfielder now who's doubled his price.
Sure, yeah, I think that's a good shout. I think Bentancur, since he's settled in, did Conte improve Kulusevski?
Yes, Kulusevski was a joke that Juventus wanted out.
I think that it was an easy job to not be Allegri, but he did do it, to be fair.
Sure. Okay. I don't think that's enough. I think we can expect more. And what was the other point I was going to make?
But you can't. Conte can't mitigate a serious drop off in terms of players who've just fallen off a cliff. From Son to Hugo. I think Kane is probably as good as he's always been. Has he improved? I don't know. He's doing better things, but I don't think Conte can take credit for that. I don't think you can fire Conte just based on results. I think perhaps he overachieved last season.
Is the third thing the things that he says in the press, Windy?
So I think. There's two other issues. There's the way he talks about the club, which irks at me, and I just think it's unnecessary.
He said he was happy with the performance after the game, by the way, in case you missed that.
Just weird. Just weird.
He praised Arsenal for their brilliance and that we were, you know, we should be proud to have done all right.
Like, what do you want him to say, Windy? Do you want him to come out and say everybody's a dickhead? Like, and then go full Jose and then you'll still complain about him?
I want him to not act as if he is above the club. Once in a while, it'd be nice if he just wasn't a twat about his standing in the club. And the other thing is this contract situation. I just don't think it's tenable that you can have a manager who has months left in his contract and won't commit one way or another to the project that he claims to want to oversee. If you want to oversee it, sign an extension, even if it's just a year. A year's a year. A year's not a long time in football. Just sign on for a little bit longer, and then we can back you. I think this position is too delicate. Like, we can't do this. And the other point I would make is, I think people talk about this as if it's the end of the world, as if, like, if Conte goes, we're screwed. Like, no, we're a massive, massive club with untold wealth and a stadium that brings in enormous revenue every single match. We don't need to worry about getting relegated anytime soon. We're going to be just fine. The problem is, what do we want to achieve next? And that's where, you know, we've had this conversation so many times. There is no strategy at this club for continuity. There's no strategy to build towards something. There's no joined up thinking around the resources at our disposal and how we get the best out of them. There's no joined up thinking around the academy, the recruitment, the way we appoint managers, the way we sign players. And until that is fixed, we're going to constantly be in this state of flux. But I think that we could start right now, day one, of changing that strategy and actually having a strategy. But I do think that would involve sacking Conte.
So you sack Conte to give Tottenham Hotspur focus on what they need to do in the future. Sorry, Nathan.
Yeah, I think so. I think you do need a long-term approach, and I don't think Conte is part of that. I also, as simplistic as it sounds, you know, we had that long conversation at the start about you appoint a manager that plays a back three, and that's how you mitigate signing players for a Conte system. How many managers play a back three nowadays? You're limiting your pool tremendously. You know, some people on Twitter seem to think that playing with the back three is just dead now. Like, you're not going to, there are no successful teams who play with the back three. I don't personally subscribe to that theory. I think you can play a back three and still play a positional play model, which is absolutely fine. But I do think you're limiting your pool significantly if you're signing players for a back three and then requiring a manager to come in and pick up the pieces.
I think the reason that a lot of Spurs fans feel that if we sack Conte, we're in significant trouble is the fear that Kane will leave if we sack Conte. That the idea being that we sort of managed to keep Kane around because we brought in Mourinho, who's a big name, and he was excited to work on the Mourinho. We brought in Conte because he's a big name and he was excited to work on the Conte. Fact of the matter is, a situation right now, why would Kane stick around for the summer?
Yeah.
Right, if we finish, where are we in the table right now?
Fifth.
Right, so if we finish probably sixth or seventh playing like this, why is Kane going to want to stay as it is anyway? I think that at this stage I wouldn't hold it against him. I think that the club have failed him.
I'm all right with Kane going. I've come to terms with it. I don't care anymore. Kane can go. I'm in that kind of mood with everybody. I didn't like that sentence that we've let Kane down. He's let us down plenty of times as well. I think loads of them have. I would not be against sell Son, sell Kane. Get rid of Conte. Start again. Let's reset. And then have a proper painful rebuild. Fuck it. Let's do it. Why not? I'll do it. I'm in for that.
I'm still either way, right? I'm still saying we could do that. That's a completely legitimate thing. Or we can say, no, we want to make the thing with Conte work. So this window in the next 2 weeks, we're going to spend a lot of money on a right wing back. We're going to bring in, okay, we don't need the Kulusevski backup maybe now because we have Hill. Therefore, we're going to get a creative central midfielder so that Conte can play a three-man midfield if that's what's necessary for us to be able to compete for balls in midfield. We're going to buy a backup right centre-back because Romero's out injured half the time and Davinson Sanchez cannot play football. And we're going to think very seriously about whether we also need to buy a backup goalkeeper this same window. I'm talking about four big signings in January, and that is a very difficult thing to do. 2 weeks left in the window, we're talking about a hell of a lot of money. But in my opinion, if you don't get three of those, there's no point continuing with Conte.
I agree.
So now we always go after the Enoch outlet for not having a plan. When do you fire Conte? What do? You rehire Poch?
I don't think it has to be Pochettino. I mean, I think it would be quite Pochettino. I think it feels like Pochettino is waiting for the Tottenham job to come back up. And, you know, from all the reporting, it seems like Levy thinks there's unfinished business there. So I do think it would be Pochettino, but I don't think it needs to be. I think there are plenty of progressive managers that you could choose who would be just fine. And I often hear the argument, oh, Spurs fans won't tolerate someone who's not a big name. And I kind of think, so what? Just who cares what the fans think? They'll get used to it. Like, as long as the football's good, ultimately, that's what the fans will care about. Like, when we first got Pochettino, a lot of people turned their noses up at him. And within 6 months, people were saying, oh, now I see why we appointed him. Like, we're actually playing some really good stuff. You can see how much he's improving players. You can see the system and the way it's building and growing, and players seem to be understanding their roles. Fans get over that kind of thing pretty quick. I don't think we need to necessarily go for a name just to appease the fans.
That's where we've gone wrong. I think, yeah, you know, probably appeasing Kane rather than the fans, or appeasing Levy's perception of what a good coach is. But we've been going for names.
Yeah, yeah. And look, I don't know about Kane and what he'll choose to do, but it can't be much fun for him at the moment playing this style of football and not getting much of the ball and like not getting many. I don't know. He's scoring goals. Kane's had a pretty good season, but it can't be much fun to play in this team, playing for one half every game. And, you know, he'll be watching Arsenal and Newcastle and Brighton and other City, of course, teams that are playing better stuff with their central strikers a bit more involved, perhaps. And he'll probably be thinking, like, I could be doing that. I could be excelling in one of those teams. Kane's going to go or not go, and I don't think the decision over whether we hang on to Conte or not will have much of an influence over it. As Nathan said, we're probably going to finish outside the top four at this stage. He's got to think about what he does for the rest of his career. He's getting to that point now where he's going to be post-peak pretty soon. Yeah, I don't think we should base any decisions around Harry Kane, frankly.
I'd sell him for £80 million to buy Munich this summer.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I think that, yeah, our chance to be the kind of club who can hold on to Kane has passed us by, and that we fumbled it. If you want specific names, yeah, Pochettino's a perfectly good option. I still think that he's a very good coach. I like De Zerbi at Brighton, but he's midway through a season. I like Ange Postecoglou at Celtic, but he's midway through a season. Ruben Amorim, maybe. I need to think about him some more. I think that's probably it. Obviously, I liked Ten Hag and Potter before. Ten Hag is on fire. You know, good for him. Maybe Potter's going to be sacked from Chelsea, but I am drawing a hard line. No more former Chelsea managers.
Especially not Tuchel. He's fucking weird.
Oh yeah, Tuchel as well is probably a very good coach, but apparently maybe a Tottenham fan. But all his former players talk about what a dickhead he is, so yeah. don't need that.
Yeah, Bardi, how do you feel about Pochettino coming back in?
I'm probably quite against it, but I don't mind if you two are for Pochettino. I don't mind for once being the one who's anti our manager. He's not my hashtag, not my manager. So
do you feel like it would sort of galvanise the fan base a little?
No, I don't think so. I think it probably splits it even more. I still remember Pochettino's last 18 months, apart from the Champions League, which was miserable. We not winning away from home, treading water in the league, not going anywhere. His weird press conferences, his weird comments and everything else. No, they're still quite fresh in my mind. The sour end to it, which I think a lot of it was on him as well.
Mm. I happen to agree with that as well. I think the winks Sissoko midfield that he insisted on sticking with was one of the worst things I've seen Spurs do since they became good. I couldn't comprehend or get my head around it, but I definitely feel as though it's really difficult because it's very speculative, but I don't think Pochettino is in a great place. And I think that's like, he just didn't look a particularly happy or well man by the end of his time at Spurs. I think like it probably just become all a bit too much. Like this, it was a hell of a journey and it was a very difficult time for him, I think. And maybe some distance and some time away and a break now after his time in, at PSG might have kind of refreshed him, because I remember for the first couple of years, like the energy and the positivity that he brought with him were just absolutely incredible. I've never done anything like it.
I think that the reason I'm okay with him coming back would be because we have a director of football now. And
yeah.
He would have to work under the director of football structure, and that he would have to accept players that weren't his first choice.
Yes.
If, you know, they was, were the ones. I'm still not like settled like, oh, Paratici is definitely good at what he does, right? I'm still a little up in the air about that, I think. But under the idea that we should have a good director of football, and we do have a director of football, Pochettino has to come in, and any other future manager we have to move past the days, and this applies to Conte very much so as well, we have to move past the days where the manager is having the most dominant say on our recruitment, because I think that that is just completely outdated. Mm. So this is a conversation you and I, Wendy, have had back and forth a lot, is how much Pochettino himself was responsible for our lack of action, especially in the 2018 window, but generally in our yeah. failure to do anything in midfield for a long period of time until yeah. it was too late. And I know how you feel that he was significantly responsible for that, then that's why I feel like a director of football does a lot to mitigate those issues. So on that basis, I'm saying back Conte or Poch back.
Mm.
I think it's been kind of doom and gloom, but I do think there is some positivity around Tottenham. We do have some really good players who are in their early 20s, mid-20s. So when we say this is the end of the road, if we sack Conte, I do think there is a future there with Tottenham. But
for sure.
It just needs somebody to really swing the axe, and Levy has to get some of these players out. As much as it means signing players, we need to get players out.
Yeah, you're right. We do have some really, really good talents. And I think there's like a new coach could shape this squad into something quite exciting quite quickly with just a few tweaks around the edges. And I think a centre back would be absolutely critical to that. But you know, you look at Kulusevski and Bentancur and Romero and Spence potentially, and Udogie potentially, and Brian Hill, I think, is a talent. Saar looks a good player. There's definitely some potential and talent there to create something pretty good. And then, you know, you've got Kane and Son, who, if you hold on to them, are good players, and Son will get back to being a good player. I don't believe that Son is dead as a player. I think there's a lot of talent there. There's a lot of possibilities, but there is also some surgery to do, you know. And Levy's decision now is whether he wants that surgery to happen for Conte or for someone else.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Barney, and our tactics guy, Nathan Aklar. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/TheExtraInch. Production is by Nathan Aklar. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Creighton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram at David Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the ex-subs, we love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.